together with you and through the lens of our Chachamim, Midrashim, and Gemaros, I wanted to take a journey through what I'd like to call Hashkafic self-discovery. I'm not some pop psychologist. I don't have the solutions to all of life's problems. But nonetheless, I think, just in my own growth, the sources that I'm about to present to you were very inspiring, and especially in times of difficulty in life. And I think that together we could learn enormous insights into the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu acts in the world, and specifically the particular circumstances under which we live and grow and sometimes fall and hopefully get up again. Let's start from a medrash, a very good place to start.
Are there extra sheets anywhere?
There should be, except I might have given extra here. Are there any extra on this side? Okay. It's one sheet, it's two-sided.
Are you listening yet?
Okay. Okay, so we'll start slowly till everyone gets the sheets. The medrash before you is quite a long one. We're not going to do all of it. It's a medrash Tanchuma in Parashas Pekudei, as you see. It's quoted elsewhere as well. Again, my apologies to the Shana Betters who have graciously honored me with the attendance, but it is somewhat of a repeat of last year's share, but we'll try to enhance it in a way that should add an additional insight. I labeled this medrash every five lines so we could follow along and not lose our place. Let's begin. Am Rabbi Yochanan. Mai dichsiv oseg dolot ad ein cheker nefloot ad ein mispar. Pasuk in the Sefer Iyov. That which it says that Hashem does wonders without our ability to fathom it. Wonders that are innumerous. What wonder, Rabbi Yochanan indicates, can this pasuk be specifically referring to? Teidalecha, shekol neshamot shayu min adam rishon, v'sheyu ad sof kol olam, kulan nivru b'sheishet nemei breshit. All of the souls that were created from the days of Adam Rishon till the end of time were all created during the 6 days of creation. Again, that in of itself is an interesting insight. Normally, I guess we think that before life is created in this world, so the soul has to be created in the heavens. But the Medrash tells us that that's not the case. Just like the angels were created during the 6 days of creation, all of the souls were created in the 6 days of creation. There were no new souls that were created ever since the 6 days of creation. Apparently, hanging out, if you will, in the soul storage house. Those who perhaps have seen some of the sources that we gave out in the Mashiach class. So the Gemara calls that place where the souls are stored the Guf, with, if you will, a capital Gimel. Apparently, one would get the impression, based on other Midrashim, we're not talking about some cramped storage place, but they just, get me out of here. But it's a place where these souls enjoy, if you will, the Ziv HaShechina, the heavenly bliss of the radiance of the divine presence, a pleasure that is, of course, way beyond any of the pleasures that we have in this world. But all of them were created in the beginning of creation. Again, this is not our topic for now, but just it's interesting to reflect sometimes, and the Chofetz Chaim gave a very interesting analogy of this, that if you ask the person, how long do you live, so what would you say? Well, we don't know, but give a range. So most people would say anywhere from, well, we hope, like at least 70 years, you know, maybe 120, inflation, maybe 130. But that's it. But perhaps with an analytical twist of things, what do you mean by live? And what do you mean by you? Every day in the davening we say, Elokai neshamosh nesatabi. The soul, if you will, the ultimate source of who we are, lives for how long? forever, forward in time, not backward, because they were all created in the Sheshet Mei Bereishis. So that means the stay in this world is really only a very small slice of the eternity of our existence. Very interesting idea to contemplate in its own right. Again, if you take a careful look at the Bracha V'lokai Neshamash and Asatabi, it speaks about that idea. Berasa, Yitzarta, Mishamra Bekirbi, but ultimately that bracha is indicating that we basically live forever. But getting back to our main focus, skipping now to line 3, in the middle of the line after the comma, Elu gdulot she'oseh HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'yitzirat havlad. These great wonders that Hashem does in the world, in the creation of the embryo, we'd say. Ela b'shah shebo adam l'shameish mishto romeiz HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'malach ha'memuna ala herayon. When a child is about to be conceived in the world, so there's a heavenly, if you will, spiritual infrastructure that is driving the physicality that's occurring in this world. And that malach happens to be called Laila. That itself needs analysis. What is the message of that? That the malach who is appointed on conception, if you will, the spiritual power that generates the physical reality, why is it called Laila? V'Kadosh Baruch Hu omer lo, da, shezo alayla notzar adam mizera ploni. Tonight, a person is going to be created. And as we'll see, that event is not just a run-of-the-mill event. That is, if you will, one of the tachlios ha'olam, the whole purpose that God created, all of the billions of stars and the billions of chemicals and the billions of plants and life forms. It's all for the creation of these Adam. So when this is about to happen, let's just put it mildly, that the heavens are shaking. Something very exciting is happening now. A whole series of events are about to unfold in order to bring the world one step closer to its ultimate destiny. Continuing along in the Medrash, we're at the end of line 4, Dalecha v'shamer b'zo atipa. Watch this drop very carefully. Don't drop it. V'tolosa b'kapcha. Take it in your hand. Again, a lot of these midrashic ideas perhaps are meant to be interpreted allegorically. V'zra'ota b'goren. Literally planted in the granary. Obviously meant to be an analogy. L'shasa chalokim. Divided into 365 parts of Osalokain. In my interpretation of this medrash, I happen to have a soft spot for science. So there's something which you might have studied called the blastocyst. Or we could Yiddishize it as a blastula. Sometimes called a blastula. And what is that? Anybody study a little bit about embryology? They multiply, right? After the union, the fertilized egg splits into two, and then into another two, and then into four, and then into eight, and into 16. And then by day 40, this blobule decides to get a little more exciting. A little hand over there, a little hand over there, a little foot over there. Some eye dots, some ears. And then, of course, something that no science book that you'll read on this could help but write the miraculous development of the embryo. But of course, depending on how godless the author is, that M will be lowercase or very lowercase. Perhaps this matter is alluding to that idea, the 365 parts. I don't know scientifically exactly what the count is of the blastocyst, but perhaps in the remez with the number of days of the year, ultimately ultimate reality, it's alluding to that concept. Miyad notel biyado mevi lefnei misha amar v'hoya olam. So the malach takes this, let's call it a blastocyst, a fertilized egg, and brings it before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, v'omer lefanav, asisi kechol asher tzivisani, I did whatever you told me to do. Tipazo matehe nigzar aleha. What's going to happen with this child that will be born from this drop? Miyad HaKadosh Baruch Hu gozer al atipa ma yehei b'sofa. So Hashem decrees what will happen to ultimately the human being that will be formed from this. Im zachar, im nekeva, whether male or female. Im chalash, im gibor, whether weak or strong. Im ani, im ashir, poor or rich. Im katsar or aroch, short or tall. Im michuar or na'eh, ugly or beautiful. Im aveh or dak, large or thin. Im bazui or gas, degraded or base. We have all kinds of physical characteristics, gender characteristics, economic stature. V'chein gozer al kol korotav. And Hashem decrees about all the happenings that will occur to this particular child throughout their lives. Avalim tzadikim rashalo. But not whether they'll be righteous or wicked. Ela hadavarahu nosno biyado shelodam. That's only determined by the person themselves. They use their free choice to determine whether they'll be righteous or wicked. I am placing before you life and good, death and evil. So much for the guf. We're not up to the neshama yet. The midrash attributes these qualities, if you will, to what we would call genetics. And the Medrash is filling in, well, who's determining this genetic union that in turn will generate these qualities? And of course, there's more than genetics here. Wealth and poverty is not due to genetics, but maybe it is. Because maybe it's determinative of what kind of personality that person is and whether they have the brain to invest in good stocks or not. But maybe not, either way, but it's determined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, just an insight from science that many of you have perhaps studied. We know that that the chromosomes, right? Usually a human being has 23 sets of chromosomes. And you've all heard of the notion of dominance and recessiveness, right? That brown beats up blue, and red hair beats up brown hair. All you need is one gene for that, and sometimes the genes blend together that are co-dominant to create some kind of blend. Right, you see that a lot in cats, where they have different shades of color based on the pair, the mother and the father. And then there's something that's not so well known, it's called gene swapping. Where during, because with the two chromosomes, if it's all going to be aligned always the same way, then there's going to be a very fixed pattern of the descendants. But in the, what is it called, the spindle of the chromosomes in the process of meiosis. So then when the chromosomes kind of bunch together in some kind of thread-like substance, they decide, let's make things a little lively. Let's swap genes. So that the chromosomes don't always remain all in tune, like brown hair, certain body shape, certain color eyes and so on and so forth, all on the same one, so it should all go together. No, the genes are more exciting than that. They swap so that the possibilities are totally endless. Now, you could write it from a purely dry scientific perspective, but the Medrash seems to be filling in here. Who is causing that swapping? And who is causing that precise cell from one parent and the cell from the other parent to determine the genetic nature of this embryo? Again, it's frightening to reflect on this, and ultimately this Medrash is telling us that's exactly what's happening. And the Medrash couches that in the terminology of the Malach coming before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and saying, Vlad Zeh Matehe Olal. What is going to happen with this being? I'll speak more about that later. In terms of not only the nature aspect, if you will, but also the nurture aspect. Which family the child is going to be born in, which schools they will be sent to, which friends they will have, and so on and so forth. Obviously, all enormous influences on one's life. Now we get to the soul. We are now on line 8, the middle of the line after the comma, Miyad Romeza Kodesh Baruch Hu L'malach HaMemun Al Ruchos, the angel that is appointed on the spirits, or the souls. Ve'omer lo, havei li ruach ploni, shehi b'gan Eden. bring me a certain spirit that is in Gan Eden, Sheshmo Ploni, whose name is the Father. Name? Souls are named? I used to think souls are just kind of like spiritual stuff. You know, spark of life, the way sometimes people refer to as a soul. You mean each soul has a name? The Medrash says yes. And then it continues. V'toro kach v'kach. Simply speaking, we would say that it looks like this. Bring me the orange one with yellow stripes. What? What might this phrase toar mean? Toar sometimes means appearance, but what else might it mean with respect to souls? Bring me the soul that is such a toar. Obviously it doesn't mean color. Bring me the round one. No, not the blob one. It's like, bring me the square. What'd you say?
Characteristics.
Presumably, yes. Characteristics. Midot. Very fascinating insight. Rabbi Kaplan elaborates on this as well, in his Sfarim, and many others do as well. Each soul has different characteristics. There was once a tape. There used to be something called a tape. It has like wheels around it and like little magnetic stuff that you put into something that used to be called a tape recorder. It was developed by the cavemen. So on such a musically sounding device, there was once a tape about Lashon Hara. And I was trying, I don't know, these things don't really impress me too much. I think they're too spooky and don't really inspire too much. But it was like a scene in heaven about someone who hadn't spoken Lashon Hara and someone had spoken Lashon Hara. So like the lady in charge of like the heavenly like judgment secretarial staff or something. So she said, next soul in the queue. So that's the way I used to think that souls come down to the world, you know, like the next one up. You know, there's a child that's reborn, so the next one in line. And this Medrash tells us, no. Hashem tells the Malach that's in charge of these souls, get me that one. No, not that one. That's not going to do here. That one. Chaim Yankel. That's the one. The one with these characteristics, that's the one that belongs in this body. So then the soul appears before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're now in line 10. Miyad holecha malach u'meviyat ruach lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu shibo miyad koras u'mishtachav lefnei HaMelech Malchi HaMlochim. The soul prostrates, so to speak, before God, obviously allegorically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Otasha'a omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'ruach ikonsi b'tipazo. Please enter into this physical drop here, because that is where you're going to play out your life. Shebiyad Ploni, Pasach Haruach Piv, so the soul answers, Va'omer Lefanav, Ribono Shel Olam, Daili Ha'olam Shayisi Dorbo, Miyom Shebrasani. I'm perfectly happy in Gan Eden. I don't need anything else. This is fine, thank you. Lamer Etzon Chalach Niseini B'tipa Zo Srucha. Why do you want me to put me into a putrid physical drop? That's not for me. You're not serious, are you? Like, soul, heaven, doesn't belong in any kind of physicality. Shanik tosha Torah, I'm holy. V'nigzura migizrat kvodecha. I am carved out of your heavenly decree. Again, this is not for now, but many people go around saying that a soul is a part of God. If it's not heresy, it's wrong. A soul is a portion that is created by God. Elokai neshama shenasati b'tahori atov v'rasa. Hashem does not slice himself into pieces and create souls. End of tangent. Let's now move on. Miyad omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu neshama. Don't worry. Olam sheni machnis chabo yafeh. It's a wonderful world. Yehei lecha mimasha yisador bo. Almost sounds a little bit like the Peter Pan scene where trying to tell him, don't worry. I know, is this, no one saw Peter Pan?
No.
You know, like, don't worry, you know, Never Neverland is pretty good. It'll work out. You should know that all your holiness and all your greatness, you were created to merge with this physical drop. Now, the soul is not so excited about this. That's it, you know. After all, I'm the boss. This is why you're created. Enough argumentation. In you go. V'achar chozer ha-malach. We are now approaching line 15 or line 14. V'machnisa roch ha-toch me'eimo. V'zamnino shnei malachim. There are two angels to guard him. V'shamir noto shlo yetzei misham. Shlo yipol. V'machnisino so sham ner deluk al rosho. Obviously meant to be taken as some kind of spiritual ner, not a physical ner, otherwise the mother would burn up. This is Eov talking and saying, I have so many tzarot. Let's just go back to the good old days when I was just an embryo in my mother's womb and I had this ner on my head. This is the Tanakh source for this concept. And again, here you have the famous phrase, behilo. What word did that give to the English language?
Halo.
You know, the idea of some kind of ring. It doesn't really say it's a ring, but some kind of glow, if you will, in indicating some kind of spiritual crown. Umabit v'roa misofku, and line 15 toward the middle, umabit v'roa misofku lamad sofo. This soul has not yet, if you will, it's not totally fused with the body. So it still has soul characteristics and therefore is still able to see, not with physical eyes, but with spiritual eyes, and is able to see much more than the physical body would allow it to. It sees the whole world. Not lo ha-malach misham ha-malich al-gan Eden, umar lo ha-tzadikim, yoshen bekavod v'troseim b'rosheim. So now the soul takes a tour. The same malach that put him into the body, that gives him a tour of Gan Eden and says, "Omra malach lo toruach teidelach lamiyem elu." Do you know who these people are? Amalei ruach lo adoni. I don't know. Choser malach v'omra lo halalo shata roe notzru b'tchila kemoscha b'toch me'eman. They were created just like you. You know what they did? Yatsu l'olam shemru haTorah v'mitzvot. They followed Torah mitzvot. L'fichach zachu v'nizdamnu l'tova zo shata roe. Now they're getting the real Gan Eden. Not the pre-Gan Eden that you were living in before, which was nothing like the reward that they were receiving after. And you know why they got it? Because they acted properly. Dalacha, shesofcha latzeit min ha'olam. We are now on line 18. Vim tizkev tishmor ha-Torah shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu tizkev lekach. If you keep the Torah, you'll get this. V'lishivat shel elu vim lav da urei shetizkev lemakom achir. If you don't keep the Torah, Chas v'shalom, you'll go to another place. And now, of course, not surprisingly, the Malach then takes the soul on a tour of Gehinnom. And everyone's screaming, etc. Again, needs its own analysis of what the nature of the screams of Gehinnom are. Rabbi Kaplan points out that it's a burning shame. It's where a person encounters truth. And they can't take the fact that they left a life of falsehood. And that, in turn, serves as a kapara to allow them to go into the name. But, of course, we do not know too much of Gehinnom, and hopefully we will never have to know. So, and then he tells them, do you know why they're here? We'll say this outside, because they came into the world and they violated the Torah. They went against HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, and therefore they are subject to this shame. Now let's skip together to line 25, after the comma, it says that he shows him the place that he will live, the place that he will die, the place that he will be buried. V'achar kach molicho metaylo al kol ha'olam, shows him the whole world with all the people there. Umar lo ha-tzadikim v'sarishoyim, the righteous and the wicked. Umar lo ha-kol, shows him everything. U'v'erev chozer otoch me'imo, now it's time to start the regular process of gestation. One of the miracles of development in the womb, the Medrash puts it like as if Hashem seals it up. Why doesn't the baby fall out? Oh yeah, there's a mucus plug. It's a few millimeters big. Again, chalila, if something goes wrong. Somehow the baby's able to stay in, you know, till the time is ripe. Vayaseich b'dlasayim yam, continuing now and skipping to line 29. Umikolma, after the comma. Umikolma she'imo ochelet v'shota, v'rishonahu ochel v'shote, v'eino matzi re'i. Here the Medrash comments on another unbelievable miracle. the embryo does not go to the bathroom. The only thing that the embryo does is passes, if you will, sterile liquid, which is just as sterile as the amniotic fluid. But the solid waste stays inside the embryo for months and months and months. Any mother that gives birth, at least if they changed the first diaper and the nurses didn't, will know that when you hold it in for a few months, it's called meconium, I think. It's ultimately one of the miracles of creation. Otherwise it would poison the mother. And the Medrash comments on this. Eino motziri. Lefichach ne'emar oseg dolot anecheker neflot ad mispar. Going back to the pasuk that we began. How wondrous is this process. I had a Rebbe of mine, Rabbi Yitzchak Cohen Shlita, he's a Rebbe in MTA in the Yeshiva University's high school and then later in the college. Baruch Hashem, he was blessed with a very large family, 9 or 10 children. Baruch Hashem, now they're all married already, they have children of their own. Probably has about 30 grandchildren by now, maybe more. So Rabbi Cohen, I've heard in his name and I could tell because he's a very lively personality. So once when his wife gave birth and he was so taken by the miracle of birth, so he went screaming through the hospital halls. And he was saying, how could it be an apikoros? How could it be an apikoros? And anyone who knows him, I don't know if you've heard of his reputation, it fits exactly with his personality. He's a Kohen, and the halacha says he's supposed to do birchas kohanim b'kol ram. So anyone who wants their ears protected would do well to go to the back of the room and Rabbi Cohen was around. Anyway, let's get back. The Medrash, besides everything else we're going to try to develop tonight, is very, very intense just in terms of appreciating not only this miracle, but the miracle of life that is so oseg dolo sarein cheker and a flow sarein mispar. Now we're on line 30 after the Kamala Sof Magia Zman Chalatzeit Lavir Olam. Miyad Ba'o To Amalach V'mer Lo Bo Tasha'a Magia Zman Chalatzeit Lavir Olam. Now it's time to be born! What do you think the soul's approach to that is? Hello? Enough trauma. I had to leave the heavens. Now I'm here. I'm getting used to the swimming. I'm getting used to the mon that I'm living off of, you know, through the umbilical cord. It's nice and cozy here, light, heavenly light on my, my head. Two angels to guard me. Now you want to take me out? You better believe that's why the child cries, which is why the Malachim, why the Medrash is actually going to say that in a moment. Of course, there's a physical reason for the cry too, but there's always a spiritual dynamic for the physical manifestation. Again, getting back. At the end of line 30, V'omelo loma toro tselo tzihini lavro olam. Omelo malach b'ni, my dear son, teida shal karcha tanotzer. No one asked you. Perforce you were created. V'achshav da shal karcha nolarata. Now you'll be born against your will. No one really asked you. V'al karcha atameis. And you will eventually die against your will. V'al karcha atasliridin v'cheshuf ne malach mechon kodesh baruch hu. You're going to have to give an accounting of what you did in this world even though you don't want to. Doesn't want to leave until the Malach, presumably on a spiritual plane, gives the baby a patch, puts out the light, now the child forgets everything. That's the famous idea of the slap on the mouth. I thought that this idea was just made up, but then someone told me, no, that's the tradition, that this is a symbol of the Malach slap, to make the embryo forget the spiritual teaching of Torah and this whole dynamic that's going on. So why bother teaching? That's what they point out, so it's relearning. So Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out that anytime you engage in Kedusha, it's relearning what you had already. Now we are on line 33. Why does the Tino cry? It lost out, seemingly, lost out on good stuff, on Gan Eden, on the embryonic existence. So the end comes for him to die. Do you recognize me? I have a kasha on this medrash. I thought the Malach HaMavis was the one who was in charge of taking the soul back. This sounds like it's the same Malach that put the... So that's a kasha. I don't know how to resolve that. If you find the kasha, please email it. If you find an answer. Do you recognize me? Oh, yeah, I remember you. Because now the soul is able again to communicate with the heavenly forces. But Omerlo, lama basli, hey, and whenever you come, you always make trouble. What are you doing here? Mikol shara yamim, you never visited me before. Omerlo malach kidei lo tziyacham in olam. Now it's time to leave. Kigi es makli poter. Now it's time to go back home. Miyad maschel boche. So the soul begins to cry. You mashmiya kolam isofo lamat sofo. Obviously on a spiritual plane, otherwise we'd be hearing enormous cries all the time. Vein abrios makirin, lo shamanis kolo. No one hears it. Chutz min ha-tarnagol, except for the rooster. Okay, what that means exactly needs analysis. V'omer l'malach, enough already. You took me out of the heavenly world. You put me into the embryonic world. You took me into this world. Let me stay here already. I'm just getting used to it. I'm just getting used to that fact that this world can be elevated. Now you're taking me out? V'alo mikvar otzei tani mishnei olamot, v'chnas tani bazeh olam. V'amolam malach, tough noogies. V'alo kvar amarti l'cho, shal korchon otzarto, v'al korchon oladato, v'al korchon atachai, v'al korchon atos l'idin v'chesh milufnei HaKadosh Baruch. It's not up to you. Sorry, time to get out of this world. The Medrash seems to have a very dismal kind of undertone to it. It's not up to you, you're being forced, the Malach is hitting him. The Medrash starts very cheerful, you know, many miracles that Hashem does for us. What is the Medrash trying to convey? So I wanted to share with you an idea that... that is primarily based on a shiur, an absolutely fantastic shiur that I heard on an audio tape from Rabbi Soloveitchik. It was actually the first time I heard his voice. My Rebbe, Rabbi Shechter, would always quote, my Rebbe, Rabbi Soloveitchik, according to Rabbi Soloveitchik. Who was this Rabbi Soloveitchik? He was just this mythical figure who like had the answers to all of life's problems and all of the difficulties we had in Gemara. But I saw pictures. I never heard his voice. This was the first time I heard his voice. Baruch Hashem, after that, I've heard quite a few audios from him. It's unbelievable. You can get a hold of an audio from Rabbi Soloveitchik. Again, you got to listen to it carefully because it's a king's English. It's not, and it's also with a European accent. There's a website, bcbm.org, Bergen County Base Medrash. You get a hold, for example, of his Shiurim on Korach. Many of you probably heard some of the ideas, but listen to that on the tape. It, to my mind, is life-transforming. But you got to listen to it very, very carefully. Anyway, the first tape I ever heard from Rabbi Soloveitchik was about these ideas, which I'm giving over to you tonight. He did not quote this medrash, but I believe this medrash is a perfect example of what he developed. But in order to give that over properly, let's take a look at the next source, 1a, the Gemara in Erevin Yav Gimelam Beis. And the Gemara tells us, Tana Rabbanan, Shtei Shanim Umechza, for 2.5 years, Nechleku Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, Halolo omrim noach lo adam shelo nivra yoter mishanivra. One school of thought, it doesn't identify who, was that it is better for a person to not have been created than to have been created. V'halolo omrim noach lo adam shenivra yoter mishelo nivra. It's better for the person to have been created rather than to not have been created. Nimnu v'gamru, the final vote was noach lo adam shelo nivra yoter mishanivra. Better to not have been created than to have been created. Achshav shenivra, once he was created, yifash beish b'masav. So he should carefully examine his deeds. V'amri lo, and some say, yimashmesh b'masav. He should fine-tune his deeds. Someone interprets the difference between working on a says and lo tases, positive commandments, negative commandments. Someone says it's the difference between general analysis and examination of how we're living our lives and a more fine-tuned analysis. What are they arguing about? Better to have been created, not have been created. God said we should be created, so it's better to be created, no? What are they arguing about? Whether we're smarter than God? And the conclusion is that it's better to not be created? So the commentaries explain that creation here does not mean creation in the level of soul. It means creation on the level of body. It means coming down to this world. That's what it means by creation. But still, so it's better to not be created, better to stay in the heavens? But didn't we learn in the Medrash that God said it's not better to stay in the heavens? But what else did we learn in the Medrash? Who says not that way? That it's better to not be created, better to not go down to the world?
The soul.
The soul! I'd rather stay here. The Malach says, yeah, but you'll be able to be much more elevated. So what is the soul saying? A bird in hand, thank you very much. I'll stay in the heavens without the challenge of this world. So then Hashem says, sorry, that's not your decision. The debate between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, with the conclusion being it's better to not be created, is from the perspective of the human being. The human being does not want to be created. The ultimate I, if you will, of the human being, the soul, would rather not come down to the world. But Hashem says it's better to come down to the world. So here Rabbi Soloveitchik, with his magical terminology, pointed out that this Medrash is trying to tell us the difference between what he labeled fate and what he labeled destiny. When I first heard these terms, I used to think about Star Wars. Luke, it is your fate! Or some kind of green goblin on some kind of, you know, orb, but saying, this is your fate. Implying that there's no free will, there's no free choice, that everything that happens to you is exactly just predetermined. Fate. So what Rabbi Soloveitchik did is explain very beautifully, yes, much of what happens to us in life is fate. But that's not where we become great. And that's not why we were put into the world. But just to create a robot that would play out some kind of preordained movie or script, so Hashem doesn't have to create people for that. What is our role? Destiny. Destiny is from the language of, according to Rabbi Soloveitchik, destination. In other words, Hashem gives you the fate. Only you can get yourself to your destination. Now, when we restudy this Medrash, you know, we spent quite a bit of time on it, that's exactly the point of the Medrash. What will this child be like? Will they look like this? Will she look like that? Will they be poor? Will they be rich? Or perhaps we could add, will they have a comfortable family life? Or will they have a wife who bangs them over the head with a frying pan every time they come 5 minutes late or stay really late for night seder? But Baruch Hashem, I don't have one. Who does that? Sometimes people have parents with whom they could confide in and feel so comfortable in their presence. Sometimes people have parents that there's constant tension from the time they're able to think, from the time they're 5 years old. Sometimes people are confronted with friends, quote unquote, who are extremely mean or embarrassing. There's so much being developed now in psychology about how damaging name calling could be. And the younger age it takes place with, the more damage it could do to the person. Sticks and stones may break my bones and names might ruin my life forever. Of course, I mean, I'm saying this as an important mussar for all of us, to be so, so careful in that. And be so careful how we raise our children in terms of being so sensitive to that. And sometimes people are blessed with friends that they mamash treat like their brothers or their sisters. Sometimes even closer. Siblings. Sometimes there are sibling rivalry that doesn't end till the day they die. There's even a famous, you know, Yiddish European story about a sister who's hated her sister, and she calls her sister over on her deathbed, and she says, Sadie, come, I'm dying. So Sadie rushes over, and I have to tell you something. So she bends over, and she spits at her, and said, I hate you forever, till my dying breath. So we hope that it shouldn't happen, but unfortunately, that sometimes is the reality. the whole dynamic of sibling rivalry is oftentimes determined by the type of family, sometimes age gap, sometimes gender difference that they were born into. And sometimes, you know, leaving aside, you know, the fights and the occasional putting the ponytail into the fire or other such pranks. But then when the children grow up, they're best of friends. When they become young adults, etc., it's like blood brothers, blood sisters. A lot of this is all predetermined. Some of it is based on decisions, but a lot of it is based on the family dynamic, the school dynamic, the parent-child dynamic. The Medrash is trying to tell us, don't preoccupy yourself with that. That's God's doing. What do you do? You are meant to study the Shulchan Aruch, to study the Sifrei Hashkafah. And how is a Jew supposed to lead their life? How are they supposed to lead their life when things are good? How are they supposed to lead their life when things are bad? And to always try to uncover, what does this curveball that HaKadosh Baruch Hu threw to me help me do as a person? How can that get me closer to my destiny? The most famous shiur that I understand that Rabbi Soloveitchik gave on this was about interpreting the Holocaust. The Rav very much downplayed trying to come up with reasons that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought about the Holocaust. That's for a Navi. What should we focus on? What do we get out of it? How can we better people from that? How can we become a better nation from that? Why? That's not a question that you're going to be able to answer. But the answer, to paraphrase an idea I heard in the name of Rav Hirsch from Dr. Lamb on 9/11, was not lama, but lima. Not why, but for what. Meaning, what can I learn from this to be better? Fate is the al-korchacha atanotzar, al-korchacha atachai. It's not up to you. The Medrash is not trying to be dismal. It's trying to tell us, don't try to change what you can't change. Take what you have, and back to the Gemara Erevin, yifashbesh b'masov, yimashmesh b'masov. Take the package that Hashem has given you and determine, how can I become the best person that I can become from it? And maybe these challenges are the only way I could become a great person. As they point out, I used to teach in Shevach High School. So in one of the administrators' rooms, they quoted a Hebrew phrase, it's probably from English too. There was a picture of a bicycle, right, going up a hill. And it said, Im koshelecha, siman she'ata ba'aliyah. If it's difficult, that's a proof that you're ascending and you're becoming better. Too often, we ask the question, why? Why do I have to have such miserable friends? Why do I have to have such sorrow for my children? Why do I have to have such a difficulty in comprehension? Why do I have to have such terrible neighbors? Baruch Hashem, it's a small story. I think the class knows, my wife, Baruch Hashem, had the schus to address this wonderful audience. So we have an autistic son, Shmuel. I think my wife told stories about him that are very relevant to this year, but since she already gave over those stories, we'll leave them. Refer to the tape if there was one. You want to hear them again. Shmuel used to flood the bathroom all the time. I don't know if this story was told over. And see, in Israel, Baruch Hashem, the landlady admitted this to me, the manager, that they build the floors in between with concrete. So when the bathroom floods, it's not too likely that you're going to flood the one underneath you. But in America, it's usually wood. So if you flood the bathroom, you're in big trouble with the tenant down below. So he consistently flooded her bathroom. And she was an old lady in Nebuch with Alzheimer's. So every time this happens, we would hear screaming, Rabbi Haber! Rabbi Haber! There's water in my bathroom! And this happened like many times a week. I mean, the kid needed a bath, and it would always splash all over the place. Finally, the manager had enough. The year of Aliyah, we were slated to go on the flight, Baruch Hashem, July 30th. and we got an eviction notice that you are hereby evicted as of July 31st. So I ran to her office and I said, you can't fire me, I quit. There are sometimes difficulties in life. But when you encounter such a neighbor, doesn't that force you to become a more patient person? What are you going to do, yell at a lady with Alzheimer's? Especially if you're at fault. Doesn't it give you a greater insight into the fact that sometimes you're wrong, even if it's not your fault, but you cause someone distress? Doesn't, and my wife I'm sure spoke about this, raising a child who maybe does not have the talents that a quote-unquote regular child has, doesn't that build your character? Doesn't that make you into a better person? My wife spoke about sunrise, even though it's from a secular perspective, but it's very, very beautifully parallel to Torah ideas. Don't kvetch about the lot that you're given. Be happy, because happiness is a choice that you could make, which is based on the fact that God knows best. And this is the way I was born, this is the family I had, and I can learn from what I, from my experiences. I have a close friend of mine who, Baruch Hashem, now is happily married. He has a large family, very successful educator. His wife also a very special person. And at an earlier stage in his life, there was a broken engagement. I'm not sure the whole story, it doesn't really matter. And I remember he shared with me the following insight, and I'm so happy that he shared it with me, because it was such a beautiful way of looking at adversity. He said that after he overcame that sorrow of that broken engagement, you know, thinking there'll never be another one, etc., he put himself together and says, now, Baruch Hashem, Bezrat Hashem, when I get married, I will be able to take people who have broken engagements and tell them there's a future for you. Because I went through it too. And I got over it. And you'll get over it too. That's taking a curveball that a Kodesh Baruch Hu sometimes throws us, the fate, if you will, and converting it into destiny. The time is late, but I did want to give over a few ideas. So we'll now, if you would like to, and I would urge you to do so, because there's quite a bit of material here. There are a lot of additional sources that highlight these ideas, but again, we'll do it orally. The Gemara in Tainis, of Chafei Amid Aleph, in Source 2, quotes a story of Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas was one of the great Tanoim, again, not as quoted as some of the others, not as famous, but nonetheless one of the great Tanoim, and he lived a very miserable life. A very difficult, presumably poverty, illness, etc. So once he fell asleep, there's nothing in the cabinet. He had some kind of like garlic for supper. It was the only thing he could find, some like garlic clove. And he just collapsed. So then they came to visit him, the Chachamim. They saw him there, and they saw that he was crying and smiling, and suddenly a lightning bolt came out of his head. Quite an interesting experience. So then he woke up and said, oh, holy rabbis, what are you doing? Nice to meet you. How can I help you? So he said, well, wait a second, you're not getting away with that one. Why were you crying? Why were you laughing? And why did a lightning bolt come out of your head? So I said, well, that's a simple answer. And I was drifting off into sleep, and I saw the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I cried before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how long am I going to have to suffer? How long am I going to have to lead such a miserable life? I mean, I spend my whole life studying your Torah, doing your mitzvot. In other words, he was asking, why my fate? Why my fate? It's not fair. How long am I going to have to suffer? So now let's just see one line of this Gemara in Tainis. Third line, middle of the line. V'amar li, Elazar b'ni, my dear son Elazar, nichalach te'afche la'alma mereisha? Would you like me to recreate the world for you? Efshir demisyaldis bishata demizoni. Maybe you'll be born in a time of where you'll get some mizonos, meaning where you'll have food. You see what Hashem is asking him? You want me to recreate the world, and maybe you'll be born under the appropriate time frame in which your being rich will not destroy my vast eternal plan, right? And Hashem says, maybe, maybe. So going to the fourth line, Amri Lekameh, so I said before Hashem, Kuli Hai Ve'efsher? You mean you're going to recreate the world, it's only going to be possible that I'll be born in a circumstance under which I'll be able to be wealthy? So then he continued to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now we'll say it outside, how long have I lived? Meaning, do I have more years to live, or have I crossed the middle point? So Hashem told him, you've crossed the middle point. He says, okay, in that case, I'll stick it out. Meaning that it wasn't, it sounds like he's entertaining a possibility of asking God to recreate the world. So then, Hashem told him that because you didn't make me recreate the world, so I'm going to give you enormous, enormous reward. So then Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda said, that's it? So Hashem told him, well, what do you mean, that's it? So he says, well, I mean, you're God. I mean, you should be able to give much more than that. So we, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu banged him over the head with his, so to speak, finger. And that's what he explained to the Chachamim. I was originally crying because I didn't understand my fate. And then I was laughing because HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed me this great reward. And then the lightning bolt came out when, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tapped me on the head with his finger and said, you know, very cute. What's this Medrash telling us? So this I got from Avraham Kaplan in the Handbook of Jewish Thought, which, just a quick editorial, a must on all of your shelves. Even if you only read it once in a while, two volumes, Handbook of Jewish Thought, Jewish Hashkafa in a nutshell, if we could say that, but it's so deep. A Teacher's Secret, just get that book, read all the footnotes, copy and paste from the Bar Ilan, and you got yourself a shir. Okay? Not this one, partially. Rabbi Kaplan explains the following. There is a Gemara Moed Katan that says that we have it in source 4, Boni Chai Yamazoni in the name of Rava doesn't depend on merit, it depends on mazel. Boni, children. Mazoni, sustenance. Chai, life. It doesn't depend on merit. Tosis explains only. Sometimes merit can give you children, sometimes merit can increase life. But it doesn't primarily depend on merit. What does it depend on? Mazel. Okay, once again, we're back to the crystal ball. Your mazel. So let's discuss the following phrase. Mazel tov. Mazel tov, it's a boy. Mazel tov, it's a girl. Mazel tov, you're married. Mazel tov, it's bar mitzvah. Mazel tov, you didn't finish SFW yet. There's still what to come. Always bothered me. How do you translate mazel tov? Usually, good luck. Okay. You have a kid. Mazel tov. Good luck with that one. I hope they turn out better than mine. Mazel tov. Good luck when you're married. I hope that works out and you're not part of the statistic of over 50% divorce rate. Good luck? That's a Jewish expression? Rav Chaim Kanievsky, who's not known for his verbosity, when you ask for a bracha, he says, Haslach. So shouldn't we say that? Isn't that like more Jewish? Like success, prayer for success, not like good luck? So there's a beautiful, beautiful analysis of this. Not about mazel tov, but I think it helps explain it. In Rabbi Kaplan's work, Handbook of Jewish Thought, in the chapter on Divine Providence. And he explains that mazel does not mean luck. Mazel means providence that's in the fabric of creation. Hashem doesn't have just an individual plan for us. We are part of a cosmos. We are part of a Jewish history. You have to play this role in this Jewish history. If you fail, I'm going to have to change everything around. One of my rabbis in YU, Dr. Elazar Horvitz, he had a beautiful pshat in the Megillah. What does Esther tell? What does Mordechai tell Esther? Who knows if God wasn't rigging the whole providential arrangement that this is why you're the queen, so you should be able to save the Jews? And what does Mordechai tell her also? And let's say you refuse your destiny. You refuse to take the fate and transform it into destiny. Don't worry, God doesn't need you. Revach v'atzala yamad l'yehudim v'malkam acher. So big deal. So why does Esther have to step to the plate? Yeah, start all over again. Esther was the one chosen. She blows it. So now we're going to have another 13 years and another Surasach HaShveirosh or a different king or a different Haman to bring about a different Yeshua. That's not what Hashem wants. Hashem wants the one who's chosen for it to do it. If they don't, so it's like Rav Elazar. You got to like recreate the world, readjust. It's like a, what do you have, the GPS? What happens when you make a wrong turn? Recalculating. That recalculating is a very painful process in the heavens. If we make that wrong turn, again, Hashem does recalculate. But what he's telling Elazar, your mazel, the way you were born, the way you have to be, that's so rooted in creation that the only way to maybe change it is to recreate the world. You want me to do that? That's the idea of mazel. Children, life, sustenance. We're talking about the environment in which we live. Again, let's just wrap it up. The Birchas HaShachar, we all say every day. Many of you are learning some of them in Mrs. El-Malay's classes. I heard a lot about the Shiloh Asana Isha, Baruch Hashem, the drama from Mrs. El-Malay. But Chas V'Shalom to say we're trying to denigrate the axiological value of women. Chas V'Shalom. So what's the Shiloh Asani all about? Why negative? Maybe this was discussed in class. This is a question that the Achronim discuss. Why negative? Why not be positive? Why not She'asani Yisrael? Why not She'asani Adam? Why not She'asani Ish, She'asani Isha? Many different approaches that are taken. One of the most famous and dramatic approaches is based on our Shir. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't say this directly, but again, Lani Yazdati, I think based on the Shir I heard from him, I think he would agree with this pshat. Shiloh Asani. Because what do you want me to say? She'asani. But I didn't want to be created. She'asani Ish, She'asani Isha. But the inner soul doesn't want to be created. Noach lo la'odem shelo nivra. So what do we tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I'd rather not have been created. But what I could thank you for is you gave me a certain lot with a certain advantage. Shelo asani goy. You gave me more mitzvos than just seven. Shelo asani oved. You gave me a greater kedusha than an eved knani. And the man says, shelo asani isha. Even though, as Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, that men and women have equal kedusha, but you gave me more obligations. That's the difference between Eved and Isha, even though, as you've learned, the Chayiv the same number of mitzvos. But an Eved is less kedusha. A woman has less obligations. So that's Shiloh Asani. I wouldn't have wanted to have been created, but thank you for the fate you gave me, because you made it a little bit easier. Now we'll go further. Malbisha Rumim Zoke Kifufim Rokara Tzalamayim. What are we talking about? Again, tools. What the Medrash calls that which Hashem is determining for us. And then we end the series with She'osali Kol Tzarki. Really? Yes. The fate is perfect. She'osali Kol Tzarki. Tailor made for you. Couldn't be better. And we say, Hamechin Mitzadei Gover. What does that mean? Very, very powerful pasuk. It's taken from a pasuk, I think, in Eov, is it? Me Hashem Mitzadei Gover Konanu? Maybe Tehillim, I don't remember. What does it mean? Prepares the steps of man on a simple plane? Walking on a deeper plane? Mechin Mitzadei Gover. Here's the choice I'm going to rig for you. Which road do you want? Everybody has a different road, a different choice to make. Many of you have learned about the Rav Dessler's Nekuda Sabachira. Mechin Mitzadei Gover means that Hashem takes us to a crossroads. Everyone has a different choice to make. Some people have a choice whether to go to SFW or Michlala. Some people have a choice whether to keep Shabbos or not. Some people have a choice whether to become a murderer or not to become a murderer. Everyone's choice level is determined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hamechem Mitzadei Gover. Once again, fate. So then what do? We ask Hashem, can you help us? Ozi Yisrael B'Gvura! Give us the might to turn that fate into destiny. Oter Yisrael b'Sefara. You give us the ability to crown ourselves with the crowning glory of victory. And finally, Anosein Leoav Koach, to give us strength to take all these challenges in life and transform it into destiny. And then we say a long bracha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can you please make our fate a little easier? Lo lidei nisayon, lo lidei vizayon. Can you give us a chover tov? We shouldn't have a chovera, we shouldn't have a shochinra. What are we asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu? This is really beyond our control. But we ask Hashem, can you make our fate a little easier? We recognize that if you decide that no, so that's what's good for us. But we daven that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should make our fate as easy as possible so that it could bring us to our destiny. The last sources, from 6 through 11, we'll just say it over short and sweet, is the notion of Eved. We would think that an Eved is the most degraded title you can give somebody. As a matter of fact, the Gemara says if you call someone an Eved, you know, you have to pay a certain knas, etc. But if we think about it on a different level, the greatest of figures, Moshe Rabbeinu, what is the hesped that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives for him? What is the eulogy? Moshe Avdi Meis. My Rebbe explained, Herschel Schechter, based on the Radak, the first Radak in Sefer Yoshua. What's an Eved? So in Halacha, that was the beauty of Rav Soloveitchik, he would blend together the Halacha and the Agadah and explain the Agadah based on Halachic principles. An Eved is Masha Kana Eved Kana Rabo. The Eved doesn't exist for himself. The Eved exists for the Master. My wife, Tlita, had a pshat once that's why Eliezer is the prototype of an Eved, because he doesn't even refer to himself by name. He's Eved Avraham. Why do I live? I live to serve my Master. So we learn from Eliezer how to be an Eved of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We sing and dance, Ano Avdo Dekut Shabrichu, I am a slave to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I am a slave to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sounds very, very odd. But when we think about what that means I take all the tools that Hashem gives me and use it for the boss. That's an Eved. And when you become an Eved, then you could be a Moshe Rabbeinu. Then you could be the greatest person who ever lived. Because now you're using the tools that Hashem gave you for what they're meant to use for, which is to connect to your Creator. So that's why Moshe is called Eved, because he didn't have anything for himself. The greatest example of that perhaps is Yeshua says, they're prophesying your death! Should we kill them? So what does Moshe Rabbeinu said? Yeah, big deal. Let them all be prophets. Miriam speaks Lashon Hara about him. Please heal Miriam. What do you think? I should be insulted over that? This is my sister. This is Moshe Rabbeinu. Everything is for God. So just very briefly, to become an Eved takes a lot of work. So this my wife pointed out also. She taught this in SKA many times. There's an Orach Chaim. I urge you to see it inside in Source 10. You ever wonder why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says Ve'avdi Kalev Ekev Hoysa Ruach Acheresim Ho, because Kalev didn't sin with the Meraglim, so therefore we're gonna save him. Avdi Kalev. What about Avdi Yoshua? Only Kalev? What about Yoshua? So the Orach Chaim explains, because Yoshua was inoculated from the Meraglim. How was he inoculated? Because Moshe Rabbeinu changed his name. Yehoshua, Ko Yoshiacho, Miyatsa Meraglim. So he wasn't Avdi. Why? Because yes, Yoshua didn't listen to the Meraglim. But that wasn't destiny. That was fate. Moshe Rabbeinu gave him an injection. That wasn't how he became great. That wasn't his mission in life. Kalev became great because he had a Yetzirah for that. The Orach Chaim explains, Ekev Haysa Ruach Acheres Imo. He had another spirit. He quotes the Kabbalistic idea, Sitra Achara. He had a Yetzirah, and he overcame. Overcame Avdi. He transformed fate into destiny. Yoshua, not yet. Not yet. The Hesped of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Avdi Meis. But you, Yoshua, you're not Avdi yet. You're an evident training. So very beautifully, Source 11, Vayhi Acharei Advarim Ha'ele, when Yoshua fulfills his destiny, Vayomos Yoshua Benun Eved Hashem. His lot was not to be kalev, was not to overcome the miraglim. That he had an inoculation for. Just as there are certain people whose lot is not that whether they'll learn or not. Their destiny is whether they'll become the Gadol Hador or not. Rav Elyashiv had a very famous grandfather from whom he took the name Elyashiv. Their family name was not Elyashiv. And when they blessed the young child, that I think the father-in-law, Rabbi Levine, Rav Ari Levine, blessed him that he should become a great Talmud Chacham and he should know Shas. So the grandfather said, Shas? Bavli, Yerushalmi, Midrashim, Poskim. And indeed, that's what Rav Elyashiv was. He knew everything. He knew Kol HaTorah Kul HaKol. That was his destiny. If he had not become that, it would have been a failure. But for other people, their goal is to see whether they can learn Daf Yomi. Their goal is to see whether they'll go over the Parsha. Their goal is to see whether they'll be a Balas or a Baal Chesed. That's their destiny. And as many, many sources indicate, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of us is not to be the giant of the earth that Moshe Rabbeinu was, or the Gdolei, or Gdolot Yisrael was. Not everyone's going to be a Rebbetzin Kanievsky that Baruch Hashem we was zochah to name our daughter after. It should be a schus for her. And our son Yosef Dov, another giant of the earth. It should also be a schus for him. Our goal is to take what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us and convert it into destiny. Because that's the way we become great. Or, in other words, that's the way we become ourselves. And just to end on a humorous note, the next time your kid tries this one on you, I didn't ask to be born! You ever try that one on your parents? So I'm not saying this will work, but perhaps you could answer, that's right, as a matter of fact, I have many midrashim that indicate that. But the best that you could do is transform the miserable lot that you think you have into destiny. Thank you very much.